We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Vince, enough of that. Are you ready for rapid fire?
Let's go. Ready for rapid fire, baby. You got some good ones in here this week, or tonight.
I hope so. We'll see how it goes. So, we talked last week about where Marcus Freeman stands in one of these, you know, the current college football coaches rankings. He ranks 30th in that ranking. Here's a question that popped up as we were wrapping up the show when we were talking about that. How many current coaches would you actually trade Marcus Freeman for? In other words,
man,
if you're going to give up Marcus Freeman,
yeah,
who are you going to trade him for? How many would you actually be willing to trade him for right now?
I mean, I suppose it would be like a handful. With the whole like loving the guys that are with you and hating the guys that are not with you kind of a, like theme that we've kind of been working with here. Over the past few minutes, you know, I feel like as a fan, like Marcus Freeman's my guy. Like I feel very attached. You know what I mean? And it almost feels like I'm going to hurt his feelings if I start pulling other coaches. But the problem, not problem, the reality of the situation is here's where I have an issue with this particular question. Number one, Freeman hasn't won anything yet. He's only been the coach for a year. I love his recruiting. I love everything about him. Right. I feel like I would obviously pick, you know, Nick Saban done. He's coming,
right.
You know, I'm trying to like Dabo Sweeney. I wouldn't mind having Dabo Sweeney. I like him as a head coach. I know he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I would bring him up here, but I feel like Marcus Freeman can be the next Dabo Sweeney. You know what I mean? And so it's like, are you hedging your bets by replacing Marcus Freeman now in year two of his tenure? Like, I want to answer this question like 3 years from now, where I have a much better idea of who Marcus Freeman is as a head coach, not just as a recruiter and a program builder and all of those different things. You know what I mean? Like, can he win the big games?
Yeah.
Can he, you know, do all of these different things? I think he can.
All those coaches, though, had those same questions their first couple of years.
Absolutely. I mean, look.
It didn't happen overnight for Dabo or Saban or Kirby Smart.
Yeah, when Saban went from the Dolphins to Alabama, right, was everybody like, there's the next dynasty? Like, nobody thought that unless they were wearing crimson, right? And so I would replace them. I would replace him now. If you gave me the option, yes, I would take those two guys and I would replace him. Maybe even Kirby Smart, maybe. But I don't think he would be all that successful at Notre Dame specifically. But man, I kind of want to put my money on Marcus Freeman. You know what I mean? Like my futures bet is with Marcus Freeman, you know? So
yeah,
I guess that's kind of where I'm at. Does that make sense? Am I just rambling?
No,
I don't know.
It absolutely does. And that's, I kind of think of it the same way. And my answer is Tyler's answer. Tyler Evans,
okay.
Saban or Smart, and that's it. Those are the only two that I would go with.
Fair enough.
Harbaugh, Day, Lincoln Riley. I mean, none of them have accomplished any more than Marcus Freeman has. You know, granted, they've been to the playoff, but and Freeman hasn't. But ultimately it's about winning championships, right? None of them have done any more. And I agree with what you're saying. Like, I certainly wouldn't take Brian Kelly back. I mean, like Dabo, he's done great. He's won a couple of championships, but how's he done since Trevor Lawrence went to the NFL?
Sure.
You know, like,
well, he had a once-in-a-generation quarterback. I mean,
I'd like to see, he's got two quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, playing in the NFL right now. It's the jury's kind of still out on him on exactly what these next few years are going to look like for him. And so I completely agree with what you're saying. For like the next 2 to 3 years, certainly, I would definitely hedge my bets more toward Marcus Freeman than anyone other than Saban and Smart. You know, and like you said, is Smart going to be as successful doing his thing here at Notre Dame as he is at Georgia? That's a really good question. Probably not, because you've got to go about business a little bit differently. But so would Saban, for that matter.
I will also say something that I'm sure is going to get people riled up, and I get it, because I don't know how I this is a tough one, but like, I still wouldn't be upset if Urban Meyer was the head coach at Notre Dame. And I realize he comes with a lot of baggage.
Wow.
I'm saying it. I feel like
it goes beyond baggage. I can't wait to see this documentary that's coming out on that. Let's see some details before.
Let me back up and say the Urban Meyer that was at Florida and Ohio State while he was coaching, I was fine. When he went to the NFL and went off the deep end, like, that just got weird and, you know, all of that. So I'm not saying I would necessarily take him tomorrow, but he's a damn good coach, man. Like, he's a really good coach. Questionable off the field stuff, but he's a really, really good coach. And I know that's going to rub people the wrong way, and that's fine. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I just don't know, after that whole video, you know, last year showing
the
up.
Bar.
Yeah.
At the bar. Yeah.
Married guy and that whole thing. I don't know that flies at Notre Dame.
Well,
plus the stuff.
It kind of did. So I just, you know, but not saying.
Plus the stuff with the assistant coach who he enabled, you know.
True. That's true.
With the domestic violence and all that stuff that was going on. He's a different breed. Although I think you can say a lot of coaches, you know, I'm not saying they're all like that, but.
There's a lot of coaches.
For most of them, winning is, you know, winning is it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I'm trying to figure out a good way to put this. I am not going to judge him on his marital situation, because there's been plenty of people that I've cheered for that have had that issue that probably people don't know about, and people still cheer for them. You know what I mean? So. Sure. It just hasn't gotten into the papers, or it's a small enough town where this has occurred where it doesn't make it into the papers. You know what I mean? It's like a nod, wink, wink situation. You know what I mean?
Right. So, but the fact that it is in the papers makes it harder to justify that.
I get that.
Like Notre Dame. If you're hiring that person.
I do get that, but there have been coaches at Notre Dame that haven't exactly been loyal to their wives. That's all I'm saying.
It's like Larry Eustace, I think it was, when he was, you know, at Iowa State, the basketball coach, and he showed up at the frat party at Missouri, and he's
right.
I guess same deal. Like,
there's ways to step out, and there's ways to do it correctly. I guess I don't know what to say here.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Things happen. Yeah. We don't always know about them. But the problem is, once we do know about them, they're hard to sweep under the rug when you're a place like Notre Dame with
this
the
kind is true
of virtues and values that you espouse.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So with USC and UCLA both going to the Big Ten next year, if you were Notre Dame, would you buy or sell replacing Stanford on the annual schedule with UCLA? So you get rid of Stanford and you replace them with UCLA.
Buy or sell? I would buy that in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, I would buy that. And I know, you know, everybody's going to talk about Stanford's academics and they're Notre Dame and Stanford. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know. I realize they're trying to be out in California. Yep. UCLA. Check that box. Right. I would do that in a heartbeat. And it wouldn't even be a question. Like, I wouldn't even think twice about it. Yes. Done. Deal.
Here's, you know, like you talk about academics, and now I don't know that it's all about academics, but like UCLA, you don't talk about them in the same vein as, you know, like a Notre Dame or a Duke or, you know, like academics. This has been a few years, but I know someone whose brother applied to both UCLA and Notre Dame. And essentially, Notre Dame became the fallback school. Couldn't get into UCLA, so he came to Notre Dame. Now, part of that is because of the, you know, the system that they've got out there in California and the whole, you know, but it's... it's a bigger school, but it's very competitive to get into. So just from a football standpoint, you know, that's what we're talking about here. I'm sure. Really, you know, like if the goal, you know, for one thing, USC and RJ Abatia, who I've had on the show the last couple of years and, you know, going back into the radio days, he's a Stanford grad and he covers USC now. But he's talked about the fact that because USC and Stanford have this alternating deal with Notre Dame, they have to play at the beginning of the season against each other all the time to make their schedules work, because of the fact that they have to take, you know, a conference bye basically in order to play Notre Dame every year, you know, in October and in November. So if you've got USC and UCLA coming in together, it seemed, you know, I don't know exactly what their setup is going to be in the Big Ten, but it would seem to be a perfect fit. You know, like you could just push Stanford out and you could do the same kind of thing with USC and UCLA. I don't know that they'd want to play each other early in the season because they're rivals. It makes more sense later on. But like for a multitude of reasons now, you've got this Big Ten NBC partnership. So if you're the Big Ten and you're NBC, I guess more specifically, if you're NBC, and you've got Notre Dame, UCLA, and USC, they're always going to be playing each other. NBC can televise every Notre Dame-USC game and every Notre Dame-UCLA game.
I didn't think about that.
And then from a Notre Dame perspective, okay, you know, they want to go to California every year. As we've said before, is Northern California really that big a deal? It's Southern California, the L.A. market where all the talent is. You'd get to go to L.A. every year.
Right.
Like, it would seem to be a perfect fit, you know, for all those reasons. Like, it just makes too much sense. So I would be all about that if I could make it work if I were Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think it's a great – did you come up with that one on your own, or did you hear somebody bring that up? I'm serious, like, because I want to give you credit if it was you, because that's a really good idea.
Thank you for the credit then, because I won't say – I always credit, you know, like, I heard it here, you know, whatever. I can't remember, like, we were talking about something recently, and it was one of those things where I've got my notepad, and I jotted that down.
Love it.
And it seemed to make too much sense to me. So
it makes That's a really good way to put it. It makes too much sense, which means it'll probably not happen. Like that's how I feel about it.
But especially, you know, again, with NBC getting involved with the Big Ten and those schools coming into the Big Ten, like I said, NBC would, I mean, like you talk about primetime games, and then they'd get, on top of that, they'd also get USC and UCLA against each other potentially as a primetime game, as long as Fox wasn't curious. So it's like, that would be, that's gold, Vince. It's just gold.
It is. It is. It's scheduling gold.
Okay, so I know some of our listeners have seen this. Former USFL president Brian Woods is launching the Spring League for high school recruits. Prospects are going to play an 11-on-11 format over 6 weeks on 12 teams spread throughout the country. The league is going to recruit 4- and 5-star talent to play its inaugural season next year. This is going to be next spring. They want to work around cities they have picked, with athletes still attending classes at their high schools and attending a few practices a week. They would the practices would be similar to an NFL mini camp, according to this story, with minimal contact. So what do you think about this? Basically a high school prospect spring league.
It is one of the worst athletic ideas I've ever heard. It is terrible. To me, the first thing I thought of was, this guy is out to exploit kids. I mean, bottom line, he's out to exploit these 4- and 5-star kids or whatever so he can make a buck. It's a terrible, terrible idea. If I'm a high school coach and one of these kids plays for my team and he gets hurt in the spring because he's doing this stupid league that means nothing, I'm livid. I'm absolutely livid that that's the case. Okay. Because high school seasons pretty much start in June, right? I mean, that's when you start working it in, you start putting it in the playbook and doing all these different things. And now you've got your best player who's injured because he was doing this stupid league in Chicago or whatever, and traveling back and forth to practice and having these games and doing whatever. Not to mention the fact that what if their school, their schoolwork suffers and now they're ineligible to play for me? There are so many things wrong with this idea. I can't believe that it's gained any kind of traction whatsoever.
See, in this, you know, like Ben says, kids are getting recruited anyway. My question is, if they're trying to fill this with 4- and 5-star guys, you know, one, are you going to have enough 4- and 5-star guys in, you know, even if it's a talent-rich metro area, are you going to have enough 4- and 5-stars to make a whole team,
right?
You know, on both sides.
12 teams.
Yeah. Why does a 4- or 5-star guy need to play in a league like this?
They don't.
Because he's, you know, to Ben's point, it's like, they're already, you know, if they're a 4- or 5-star, they've probably got a list longer than their leg of schools that they've got offers from. Why do they need to risk more injury playing in a second football season with other guys? Like, what are they going to accomplish through that?
If you're going to do this, it needs to be for like the 2- and 3-star kids so they can get their name out there.
Right.
Right. And then it's just, no offense to those kids, but then it's just bad football. Who's going to want to watch that besides their parents?
Right. And I know they've talked about, well, they're going to be NIL opportunities and stuff like that. But, you know, again,
not all states allow NIL for high school kids, by the way. That's why, the Quinn Ewers went to Ohio State. He reclassified because he couldn't take NIL money as a senior in high school. And so he reclassified and became a freshman at Ohio State. Remember that? So not even all states allow NIL for high school kids.
Yeah. It makes zero sense on a lot of levels to me. I'll be curious to see if it actually takes off. But, you know, again, if 4- and 5-star guys are the goal, then I can't see why 4- and 5-stars would want to play.
Right.
And absolutely risk that injury. Because if they haven't already committed, they're on the verge of committing, I would think, if they're ranked that high.
Right. So we were talking about Irish Invasion, obviously it was this past weekend, and there were some kids, if I'm not mistaken, there were a couple of kids there that Notre Dame's heavily recruiting. They didn't even go through the drills at Irish Invasion because of, you know, they don't need to. They're already getting highly recruited. They don't need to do that.
They don't need contact.
Yeah. What makes you think they're going to put on a helmet and shoulder pads and go bang heads with people when there's nothing on the line? I don't understand why this is even a thing. I really don't. Now, I will say, I'm going to pull up Irish Shytown's comment here. He goes, I think the USFL should let in kids right out of high school play if those five stars have no intention of getting a degree. I actually have no problem with that. That's kind of like the one and done situation, or, you know, kids getting drafted from the NBA right out of high school. I actually have no problem with that. Now, the NFL can still keep their rule that kids need to be 3 years out of high school in order to be draftable for the NFL. If you don't want to go to school, go to the USFL. I mean, I actually don't have a problem
with that. Well, and I was going to say, if this guy wants to make a league, you know, make a league that is a developmental league that does not include college, basically, I would be in favor of something like that, where, you know, like he's talking about NIL opportunities.
Sure.
That's one thing where they're basically creating a league as an alternative to college that lets these guys develop and then potentially get drafted in a few years. I got no problem with that, but
right.
The league as it's been described makes no sense to me.
Right.
Going back to the UCLA question, Terry Chillery says UCLA is nothing. Well, if UCLA is nothing, then what's Stanford? Because it's not like, to me, Stanford is less than attractive right now. And again, at least UCLA, you're in Los Angeles in Southern California, where the talent is, the bulk of the talent, and not up in Palo Alto. And they're probably going to pack the Rose Bowl when Notre Dame comes to town, for that matter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not like, again, Palo Alto, where you've got a half-empty stadium.
And it's not even that big of a stadium.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Exactly. So, Vince, I don't claim to know much about golf. You and I are kind of both in the same boat on this. But the PGA LIV golf merger yesterday caused shockwaves throughout the sports world. Is there a sports analogy you could use to explain or describe the merger?
I have thought about this all day, and it's been very difficult for me to come up with anything. Like, I feel like maybe IndyCar and whatever the European open wheel, like when they tried to combine, like, you know, they were kind of, I don't even know that much about it, to be honest with you. That's the only, like, maybe the NFL AFL like merger back in the day, but that was before my time of following sport. Well, before my time of living, but before, like, you know, I don't know all the details behind like that merger, but I remember the fact that that was a really big deal, you know, when it happened. NBA ABA, you know, that was a really big deal when it happened. But I feel like this is even more sinister than that. Like, you know what I mean? I feel like the LIV Tour was like this anti everything. And if you took the money, it was like, you know, dark money and it was poison money. And you weren't a good person if you did it. And I feel like the PGA guys who turned it down for loyalty to the PGA are now like, shoot, I should have taken the money.
Should have taken the blood money.
Yeah.
Basically. So this is the best one I saw on Twitter today. After convincing Steve the Pirate and everyone else to stick with average Joes, Peter LaFleur decided to join Globo Gym. I mean,
that's perfect, pretty good. That's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. Now, I've seen others, you know, like if the Yankees and Red Sox merged and stuff like that, you know, like you said, the AFL and the NFL merger completely different though, but you know, it almost kind of goes back to, you know, like Notre Dame joining the Big Ten, you know, like one that you would never think would happen.
That's a good point. Notre Dame to the Big Ten would
it actually happen?
Yeah, that's a
now
good
here's
one.
Actually, I saved this one. Josh put this up earlier, but I saved it because I kind of felt like maybe, you know, this is what he, you know, had in mind when he came up with this question. If universities all went bankrupt and had to consolidate with one school and join rosters, they had to share a border, what two schools would be the best And who would Notre Dame consolidate with?
Well, I mean, I guess the only part that throws me is share a border. So, like,
yeah, that's
pick up one of the universities and move it to the other one, essentially. Like, that's, I guess that's the hard part for me on that. I mean, the fun of trying to combine the rosters and, you know, things of that nature. Like, okay, we could have some fun with that. You know, if you combine like Alabama and Georgia, like everybody else might have just well stopped playing football. I mean, because nobody's going to beat that team, right. I wouldn't think. Jason Smith agrees with me. Thanks, Jason. Now, as far as Notre Dame, I think that is an actual, that's a really interesting question. So, like, do you go regional? Do you just pick the next best team that you think that they would merge with? Are you trying to find an academic fit? Like, what is your criteria if you're going to combine Notre Dame with somebody? Like, I agree with Irish Chi-Town. He says Northwestern. Like, that's the first one that popped into my head. But do I really want anybody on Northwestern's roster? I don't think that makes Notre Dame a better football player or football team.
Yeah.
You know, if you figure 22 starters plus special teams, how many Northwestern kids are going to come over and steal a position from Notre Dame? You know what I mean? Like, that would be, it's not that high of a number. There'd be a couple, but it's not that high of a number.
I'm thinking Notre Dame and Duke comes to mind just because you've got good football at one, good basketball at the, you know, like traditions, championships on both sides. They're both private institutions. So that's what comes to mind, you know, like Notre Dame and Duke.
So are we, now here's the next question. Are we every sport? Because every sport, I think, strengthens the Duke argument. Because now you're talking basketball, lacrosse, you know, men and women's basketball.
Men's
for that
and women's
matter.
Basketball. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think you've created a bit of a juggernaut in a lot of sports if you combine Duke and Notre Dame, for sure.
Yeah.
So that, and then academically,
Terry said
of
the
course.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then academically, of course. I mean,
yeah. And the academics are aligned. And that's what, you know, I was thinking, you know, like Notre Dame is not going to merge with a state school. You know, it's going to be some other private institution. So,
right. So that knocks Michigan out because they're a state school. Everybody. Just saying.
Well, Salty says, Sean, where is the Indiana-Carolina border? Is it near Vincennes? I mean, we're combining schools. So,
right.
Like, you're going to have to pick one school up and move it, you know?
The only school that would, if you're not moving the school, like, Notre Dame would have to pick St. Mary's or Holy Cross. Like, those are the only two options if you're talking about not moving anybody because they actually do share a border. So,
yeah, I mean, if they actually have to share a border, literally, you know, South Bend sits here on the border of Michigan and Indiana.
That's true.
You know, and Illinois is not that far away as well. So are you going Northwestern? Are you going Michigan? Are you going Michigan State? It's got to be pretty much one. You know, I realize they share a border with Ohio and Louisville. They're obviously much farther away.
Yeah, I'm not
name actually.
Not going with Kentucky. That one doesn't enthrall me at all. I like the Duke one. I like the Duke one. I just, like I said, I have an issue with share a border.
Yeah. Well, and you know, like they said, you know, Salty said share a border means a neighboring state. Well, even if it's a neighboring state, the school is still hundreds of miles away.
Hundreds.
It's not
like
you're going to have to move a school, you know, to
it's
going to
be a tough commute for practice.
Yes,
that's going to be very difficult.
Exactly.
Very difficult.
It's an interesting hypothetical.
I like the hypothetical, though. I mean, it's fun to think about,
right?
You know, but I think you've convinced me. The Duke Fighting Irish.
You like the Duke Alliance? Okay.
I do.
All right.
Yeah.
So Miguel Cabrera leads all active Major League Baseball players with 3,198 hits, assuming he hasn't played today and didn't, you know, maybe get another hit. But he's 24th all time. Next most hits by an active player is Joey Votto with 2,093. So he's more than 1,100 hits behind, and he ranks like 293. Scale of 1 to 10, How confident are you that we will ever see another 3,000 hit player in Major League Baseball?
One or less. Like, I don't, I just, number one, I don't see the longevity that there used to be in baseball. Number two, there's just not enough hits being hit by players because we're in the strikeout home run era. I mean, there's just not the Ichiro Suzuki's of the world anymore who are just up there to get base hits. That, like, base hits aren't sexy. You know, base hits win you games.
Yep.
But base hits aren't sexy. Base hits don't get you on SportsCenter. And it's a shame because
it's all home runs.
It's all home runs, man. And I just don't, there's obviously not going to be a 3,000 home run guy. And I just don't see the hit, the hits getting up that high. I just don't.
I mean, Joey Votto has been playing for a long time. He's been around for 16 years now. And,
right. And he's
the fact that, like, so he's even still playing. Yeah. And the fact he is that far behind. And this is, he's been, you know, he was perennial all-star type guy for a while. He's been the best player.
Sure.
The Reds have. And just what you said, the game has completely shifted away from Tony Gwynn, Pete Rose, you know, Wade Boggs type guys. They just, you don't see those guys anymore. Like,
right.
Like hit machines. And it, because it is all about, as you said, home runs. And you kind of touched on this a little bit, just with the way the contracts are going right now, like, guys used to get to 29, 30 years old, and then they would sign the big contract.
Sure.
And they would play into their mid 30s. You know, they would be overpaid for their services, but they would play into their mid and late 30s. But now guys are forced out of baseball earlier because they're not getting these big contracts. They're getting 1 and 2 year deals. You know, some of them still hit every now and then, but they're getting shorter contracts. They're not hanging around long enough. And that is exactly why I don't think you'll get it. So I think it's a one as well. And I'm Chi-Town just put up Mike Trout. Let me see what his hit total is.
He's 1600 even last time I checked. And
he's that, already been around for 13 years,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly. Exactly. And so he's got to double up. And I'm sorry, he's not going to hit 1600 hits in the next 13 years. Like, that's the law of averages. When you get older, you hit less.
It tapers off. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like Joe says, Trout is halfway there. But again, he's been around for 13 years already.
Yeah.
He's not, there's no way he's going to get it. He'll be lucky to get to 2,500. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah, he's not, it's going to take him a long, long, long time to get to 3,000. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's just the way the game is played. It's just not going to happen anymore. There's no slap hitters anymore. There's no, you know, I realized I said Ichiro Suzuki again, but he was just the consummate, I'm just getting on base.
Yeah.
You know, and
different kind of guy. You just, there's not that kind of guy.
Anymore. Yep.
So the Women's College World Series Championship Series between Oklahoma and Florida State starts tonight. What's your interest level in the Women's College World Series?
Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd say like a 4, you know, like we were in a hotel last weekend, down in Indy for the weekend. Like, obviously it's last weekend. And I watched a little bit of, whatever game was on, you know what I mean? And I watched a few innings. It was intriguing. But it's not as intriguing to me as the College World Series on the men's side. I am not a softball guy. I've never coached softball. I've never played softball. I'm a baseball guy, right? So I enjoy watching the baseball side of things because I understand it more. and I can appreciate it.
I mean, softball's not that different.
Well, I know, still, but there's a lot.
Different, like, enough. Yeah.
Rise balls and, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know all the ins and the outs and things like that. And it's just always, and I'm going to sound so ignorant right now, but I'm going to say it anyway. Softball fields are so stinking small.
I know.
They're so small.
I don't like the fact that they're all the exact same size. Like, I would like a little, you know, like baseball
variation.
Differentiate a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe have a park with a green monster and, you know, like your left field is deeper here and your right field is deeper, that, you know, something like that. That's really the only thing that kind of bugs me about softball. And Father David asked if I've ever been to the Women's College World Series earlier. I have not, but, you know, I do, you know, like, I'll watch it on TV. I'll watch at least part of it tonight.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, the thing with like what's going on right now is Oklahoma has won the last two national championships, and they've just been flat out dominant, especially from a pitching standpoint. That's usually what happens.
Yep.
Excuse me. It's like they get the dominant pitcher, and that's the team, you know, they ride that dominant pitcher all the way through. Florida State has been really, like, they've been kind of the power of the ACC the last few years, but Oklahoma's been the power of the country, and they beat Florida State in the championship series a couple of years ago. So,
yeah,
be curious to see if Florida State can win even one game out of this whole thing. But, you know, I typically watch off and on, and then, you know, like last weekend, you know, like you said, it's like I'll flip around. Like, the women's College World Series games would be on one channel, and then I'd flip over and watch some regional baseball, you know, college baseball regional stuff on another channel.
I told you the other day, I was in a restaurant. They had ESPNU up, and they had four college baseball games on at the same time. I was in heaven. It was fantastic. It was fantastic.
What do you think about the cheering in softball?
Hate it. That's why I can't coach girls.
I bet you do.
Hate it. Absolutely despise it. In high school, I had a girlfriend who played softball at a different school. And I wanted to go support her or whatever. And so I go to the game, and I had never been to a high school softball game before. I was mortified. It was horrible. I could not. They were getting their butts handed to them, and they're still with their little chants and cheers from the dugout. And I'm like, this is horrible. I never went to another game. It was horrible.
Did she get mad at you?
Probably. Yes, probably.
You're not with her, so
she's not my wife. So
<That's> right. Yeah, it's the one thing that I always kind of do. We really need the cheering from the dugout?
My
sister used to play softball, and they would do that stuff too. And I always thought it was kind of, that's interesting.
I know myself. I've tried to coach girl sports. When I had a girl dribbling the ball up the court, it was middle school girls basketball. She's dribbling the ball up the court crying. It's like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Like, this is not for me. I can't do this. And so I don't. I can't coach girls. I can't.
It's a good call. You know your limitations. You found a way out.
I can't do it.
Are you crying?
Come on. I'm like Tom Hanks in League of Their Own.
Right.
There's no crying.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. Neil Ivey, Notre Dame women's basketball coach, is going to join me on tomorrow's show. So we will start with that, get some of her thoughts on the summer, the trip to Paris, and a whole lot of other stuff. You know, we'll talk about some of the new additions to her team and the whole thing. And then, of course, Jesse will be along after that, and we will have rapid fire. Are you with us on Friday for Rapid Fire? I know you're going to be out of town.
So. Not this Friday, next Friday.
Oh, it's next Friday. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Next Friday. But I still plan on being on the show next Friday as long as the hotel Wi-Fi cooperates.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, that's going to do it for tonight. Thanks for all the questions, and we will talk to you tomorrow. Be sure to hit that like button on your way out if you haven't already. And, of course, subscribe, rate, and review. We will talk to you tomorrow on Ivy Nation Sports Talk.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.